You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
It's a Wednesday. You know what I love to do on a Wednesday? That's some consumer awareness work. We're going to be looking at some more warnings. It's Warning Wednesdays with our friends at the FSCA. And as usual, I'm joined on the line by the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Gerard van Tiefenton, to take a look at some of the developments from the FSCA's perspective and some things you need to be aware of as a consumer. Good evening, Gerard. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with some enforcement matters from the FSCA's perspective. Some big enforcement wins and announcements coming out this week, some fines and some debarments. Take me through those.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy, and good evening. Always a pleasure to speak to you, and good evening to the listeners. Yeah, so I think the best place to start is the NEFG case. This has been an investigation that's been a long time coming, a tremendous big job. So we are very, very happy that it is over at last. Of course, there are still loose ends that needs to be tied up, but we have finalized our investigation report and we have finalized the exhausting enforcement process through that. So you would have seen that as far as the two kingpins are concerned, that is Cornelius Jansen van Rensburg and then that Frederik Jan de Pria, those two gentlemen, they got a 30 million rand fine each. And 30 years debarment out of the industry, and which is the point you made. That's just an important point. And then there's a further administrative penalty on Stein Jansen van Rensburg of 8 million rand and a debarment period of 20 years. And then lastly, Christian Jansen van Rensburg debarred for 10 years. So a lot of debarments there, and I'm happy to speak a little bit about the debarments. But on this case, I should also mention, and this is how we look at these big cases, Jimmy. Not every case deserves this, but in these big cases, you know, they certainly belong in the criminal courts as well. So no exception here. The FSCA will definitely support the criminal authorities. We are actively assisting the National Prosecuting Authority. And not only did we open a case, but also a fair amount of the investors has also opened cases. And we're behind that, needless to say, you know, our friends at the MPA. The interesting thing about this case, Jimmy, why we are quite harsh on them is not just the fact that they acted contra mandate. In other words, that they took clients' funds that was earmarked for a low-risk investment, and they put it into something completely different. The problem also is that completely different investment that they put it in, they had an interest. Some of them had an interest in those entities. And that, for the FSCA, is a really big issue. We expect our financial advisors to always advise and act without any conflict. But that message didn't seem to go all the way through. So if there's conflict of interest, you can expect that we will take material action. It's already old news, but of the licensing part, but of course the licenses were withdrawn of NEFG administrators in December 2021 already, and we informed the public of it at that stage, and of NEFG fund managers and the wealth strategist more recently. So those licenses are gone. They can't do business again. And of course, the individuals being debarred can't do business. I'll maybe just quickly mention the Lahumo Securities one, and then we can talk about debarments if you like.
Yes. On the Lahumo Securities one, that announcement went out as well. We spoke about it previously when the license was provisionally withdrawn. Now there's been finalized enforcement actions. Take us through those.
Sure. Yeah, so also been a case that's been long-standing. It started off some time ago, and it started off as a case where clients' funds were pooled, and we said, well, that's something that's fixable. If the clients traded and there was no dishonesty or anything like, but the clients' funds were pooled, and as a result, some clients could not get their money out, then we can fix it and we can look at regularizing the business. Because you don't just want to close down businesses because you can. You need to take the economy into account as well. So it started off with a directive to the owner of the business, Mr. Lentswane, with a directive to say, find money and pay those clients out that you owe. and then we can take the matter further. And first thing I need to say is he did. He actually complied with the directive. And that was quite a mitigating factor for the FECA in making its decisions. However, unfortunately, as the investigation proceeded, because my investigators are of that kind, very suspicious people. They never take your word for anything, so they kept on investigating. As it unfolded, we realized there is a bigger issue here, and clients' funds were used to trade and so forth. And as a result of that, it now ended up as the license being withdrawn finally. And, of course, a 12-year debarment of Mr. Lintsane. We brought it down from 15 years because at the end of the day, clients were paid back. So if we ignore the time value of money, Jimmy, then the clients did get their money back. Then they didn't lose anything. But, of course, you can't ignore the time value of money. What's interesting about this case, it is also something that you and I have spoken about before, and that is that you must have a good look at what this individual you're working with is licensed for. Mm. Now, in this case, it was a Category 1 license. And as you know, because you're a bit of an expert on the in the area, that means you can do intermediary services and so forth, and you can advise. But Lintsane actually made investment or trading decisions on behalf of the client. Now, that, as you know, is discretionary business. And for that, you need a different license, which is a bit more difficult to get. And that is part of the problem, is you must stick within your license, stay in your lane. You can't now start doing discretionary business if you have a Cat 1 license, because that requires a Category 2 license. So those are the two big cases that we brought to fruition. Landed those planes, I'm very lucky to happy to say, before Christmas came.
Just in time for the festive season.
Oh, you sound like Pick and Pay now, putting Christmas stuff out already.
Gerard, I want to look at the implications that this then has. We often speak about debarments, and we get into that and we say this person is no longer able to operate within the financial services space for a certain period of time and all of that. But let's look at the seriousness of these debarment enforcement actions, because more often than not, individuals have other businesses that they might work with, or other businesses might come in and say, I want to do business with Jimmy, not knowing that Jimmy has been debarred by the FSCA. How do we navigate that conversation, and what do businesses and people need to know about dealing with an individual who's been debarred?
Oh, that's a very good question, Jimmy. I'm really grateful that you give me the opportunity to speak about that. So a debarment, firstly, the thing about a debarment is you don't have to be a financial services provider to be debarred. In terms of our new legislation, we also debar people who has not been a financial services provider. So in those instances, what we really say is we don't want you coming into the industry, although you haven't been in the industry lawfully. So that's the one thing. But a debarment basically means that you are not allowed to be involved in financial services at all. So basically, you cannot work in the financial services industry. There's no guarantee that somebody is not going to work from behind the scenes, but the management team that allows that puts themselves at risk. They put their licenses at risk, and they put their own, they raise the possibility of their own debarment as well. So you out of the industry. And this is not a penalty. You know, this is not, we're not punishing those people. We are saying to those people, we will not allow you to be involved in the public's funds. We cannot expose the public to you. So it's a protection of the public mechanism, just like the withdrawal of the licenses. And that's why, you know, it doesn't always mean that a penalty and a debarment should line up or not. But your question, the important part of your question is really, how would the industry or the public know to deal or not to deal with these people? So we keep a list of debarred persons on our website, and we keep a list of approved persons, of licensed persons on our website. So it's always a good idea for businesses to check whether there's been a debarment. A simple Google search or a search on our website will show you that. But of course, public is always welcome to phone. And the other thing I think it's fair to say, Jimmy, is that We don't debar for silly contraventions. Debarments come in when there is an element of dishonesty or material misconduct. We're not going to take away a person's livelihood because there's some fixable contravention, some oversight, some systems failure. That's not how it works. It is reserved for those people where we're looking at material dishonesty. And you won't be able to work in a financial services industry or a financial institution, but of course you are welcome to engage in any other business. But any business that does their due diligence should come across this, and then those businesses must make up their minds what are the type of people they want to employ.
The only thing we can do is protect the public as best as we can. Gerard, before we wrap things up, I want to take a look at the latest round of warnings. It seems the pattern still continues, unrealistic returns being promised to South Africans. How do we get the message home? Unrealistic returns are not possible.
I don't know, Jimmy. I've said this so many times. You have said it so many times. And we've spoken about, is it greed or is it desperation? And I just don't know anymore. But you're right, those two examples, FX Nonstop and Tiger Agriculture, are sterling examples of unrealistic returns. And as you and I discussed before, if I have the recipe to make this much money in a week, I mean, in the case of FX Nonstop, 40% per week, I can go on early retirement, although my retirement is not that far away. But, I mean, you know, how would we say to the people, how many times can we say to the people, that is not possible and I would not give away my secret if I had that secret? But there's also a second interesting thing in the FX Nonstop warning that I don't know if we've spoken about it before. But that's another big issue and another huge red flag apart from unrealistic returns. And that is, your investment is guaranteed and your return is guaranteed. It's such an important message to get out to say that's not possible. Your investment cannot be guaranteed and your return can certainly not be guaranteed. That guarantee is only as strong as the person guaranteeing it. And if that person is running a scam, good luck. But I think the moment no FSP with a license or financial institution with a license will make a statement like that, because they will put themselves in the firing line. So unrealistic returns and guaranteed returns and guaranteed capital, huge red flag, no doubt.
Learn to spot the red flags, folks. We can't keep doing this. If you're going to keep falling for the same tricks, we'll leave it at that. Gerard, thank you so much for the time and for the insights as always. That's Gerard van Deventer, who is the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, joining us to take a look at Warning Wednesdays and some of the enforcement matters by the FSCA.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.